Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
So, Nate says that you're going to buy Malbergos in return for a 10-minute massage from two men?
I'm considering it.
Are their massages that good?
It was pretty good, but I don't know how I feel about buying them burritos.
I wish I could get that deal. They won't even touch me just to say hi.
I'm Dan Nalen, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it is one of the oldest independent publications in the entire United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. In this episode, we talk to local band Mido, and we talk to the good people at the Anime Bonsai Festival, as well as talking to local jazz aficionado Mike Brown, and that's Utah Jazz Hoops, people, not jazz music. Mido is a two-piece electro-pop band from Salt Lake City comprised of Salt Lake City native Libby Linton and Washington, D.C. musician Spencer J. Harrison. The band launched a Kickstarter program late last year to get enough money to put together their debut album, and it was released in late summer. Slug writer Allison Shepard sat down with Linton to talk about the band.
I promise just the same.
How were you introduced to music, and has this influenced your sound in any kind of special way?
I mean, Spencer and I both just grew up in houses that had a lot of music and have been drawn to it from an early age. I think just over the years it's just become a really important part of our lives, and we've both gone through different phases of what kind of music we play, and this is where we're at now.
So it's kind of like one of those things that just kind of grows over time type of thing?
Well, with this project specifically, so Spencer was previously in another band called Fictionist, and then I was playing by myself, and we reconnected. So we knew each other from me playing with that band sometimes, but we reconnected a couple of summers ago and just felt like we wanted to do some kind of bigger, more complicated project. And that's, and it just kind of continued to snowball on us. So that's how we came to where we are now with Mido.
So I also noticed that your sound has a lot of orchestral elements and a lot of electronic elements.
Right.
So how did you kind of come up with this and kind of what inspired it, if anything?
So we had, I think we just, like I said, we wanted to do something that was more complicated and complex and detailed and interesting than what we had done maybe on my own or him with being in a rock band. So this was a very collaborative project. We had the two of us, and then we also had another guy, Nate Pfeiffer, who's a producer. He's worked with Cascade and The Moth and the Flame and other Provo bands. So we brought him in, and then we also brought in a violinist, who I think you're specifically referencing with the orchestral stuff. And I think there's just a lot of ideas bouncing around, and with certain songs it just kept building on itself and would get more and more complicated. But like, there's some songs, I think that's one of the unique things about the album and kind of gives it a signature sound, is the fact that we do use a lot of elements that might be a bit contrasting. There's one song where we've got an electronic beat and then we have banjo on top of that. And it, I think it makes it interesting to use real instruments like violin with synth sounds.
Yeah, it definitely makes a cool sound, like I have heard. So describe your songwriting process. Is there anything specific that you have to do to get in the zone or anything like that?
So writing for a band is a bit different than writing when you're thinking about playing it by yourself. But with Spencer, like I was telling you before, Spencer hadn't lived here at all during this whole process. So during songwriting, during recording, where we're at now, he doesn't live here. He's from Salt Lake, but he lived in D.C. for the majority of the time that we were working on this album. So songwriting became a much more, we relied a lot on technology. We'd send each other bits of ideas and get feedback, and then the other person would send stuff back, and it was just kind of a more deliberate and slow process of sending ideas back and forth. And that was our method of collaboration. But for me, as an individual, songwriting is, I don't know, I think I'm much more, I pay a lot more attention to lyrics. I think Spencer and I complement each other in the sense that he is a more versatile and flexible musician, and I'm much more focused on the details and on lyrics and what the song means and how it feels, and having everything kind of wrapped together that way. Yeah, so songwriting has been collaborative as well, but we each have a different approach to how we do it.
Did you do it over like kind of like Skype?
We use basically anything you can think of. We did a lot of Skype. We did a lot of just Dropbox files. We did Google Hangout, text call, and anything you can imagine. We were communicating, and even now, I think we probably, even though he doesn't live here, we probably communicate more than most bands. We're just constantly talking to each other one way or another. But yeah, we use a lot of technology in this band.
No, that kind of makes it
to make it work
more remarkable, in my opinion, that you can put something together when people are all
and I think that's one of the things that's just kind of the big reason why we've done it despite the inconveniences of that scenario, is that we just work really well together. Mm-hmm. Like, there's other people that I could work with, but none of them that I'd want to work with as much as him, because I think we do complement each other's strengths well. So that was songwriting. For recording and for a lot of stuff like live shows or being in the studio, he has to be here. So he does end up, we use technology in the sense of he uses, you know, planes to get back and forth as well for the things that you just can't replicate from afar. Mm-hmm.
What would you like the world to know about, what kind of message would you like to get out about your band, or if there's any kind of overall picture that you want people to know about?
And I think one of the underlying things, we've said this before, when we've kind of torn into the details of our own songs, is that we tend to gravitate toward finding an interesting perspective or finding something beautiful in the unremarkable. So like the everyday, day-to-day kind of stuff. We write a lot more, like the way I write lyrics is much more about a time period rather than a very, very specific single occurrence. It's more about the many things that were happening at the same time that all fed into a certain feeling, and trying to express all of that. We're a very visual band. We're a very deliberate, careful band with the way we write songs, and I think that comes through on the album. Now there's songs, I think there's just a lot of, you know, you think that the only way that you can feel something is if something extremely tragic happens, and that's not, like there's that on the album, certainly. There's tragic things that happen in everybody's lives, and you can't help but have that creep into whatever your creative outlet is, but there's a lot of things on the day-to-day that you just don't think about. Like, there's a song that references pulling up, waiting at stoplights, riding on buses, driving to work in the morning, everything. There's a unique perspective to everything that makes it interesting. And all of those things that happen in your life have something interesting to them, whether it's the fact that you do them every single day and you start to take it for granted. And then you get into this really regimented daily refrain of doing the same thing every day, that it's almost just like it's a wake-up call to pay attention to what you do at any given moment and why are you doing it. But yeah, so that, I think there ends up being a lot of that on the album. There's something interesting in the everyday.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I'm glad that someone, at least some band, is trying to do that.
Well, I think it's just we naturally
crazy.
Yeah, we naturally gravitate, and there's songs that are, you know, there's a song about watching a house burn down, and even that, there's some kind of, what we find interesting is having a unique perspective on something. Like I don't think we like to tell the story from the most obvious perspective.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the song "They're There," so which all the proceeds go to the Cassie and Tommy Vivillit Fund. Why this one? Kind of just tell us about it.
So we got into contact with this couple through a friend who's really involved in the music scene, and he's very supportive of has been very supportive of us. And so this friend of ours, his name's Blake, he mentioned that his cousin Tommy was going through this really hard time with his Cassie and Tommy got married. Newlyweds, and she got pregnant and then was soon after diagnosed with a stage 3 brain tumor. And so, you know, she had the baby, and it's just been this kind of intense situation with them being young and in school and having all these mounting medical bills as she's trying to deal with something that it's hard to imagine going through. They've got a brand new baby and it's a really tough situation. We wanted to help when we heard about it, and I think it just struck a chord with both of us, and we're a band that's been helped a lot by the generosity of others. We did a Kickstarter, which has been made a lot of what we've done possible. So people had supported us, and we just felt like it was an easy thing for us to do, and we should really, there was no question that we should do something to help. So that's why we started doing this with them. Mm-hmm. And that song is one that has a lot of meaning for us. Mm-hmm. It's a song for mothers. It means a lot to us in that sense. And so thinking of her as this new mother, it kind of made sense to us to have that be the song that represented this campaign.
And I noticed that I think it's donation based, right?
It's Bandcamp? Yeah. So it's on middo.bandcamp.com, and it's people can donate whatever they want. I think the average is around $10 right now, which is awesome. But there's, you know, people can give $1, they can give more than that. It's just whatever people feel like they want to contribute. And as the small thank you for donating to that, they get to download the song.
Mm-hmm. How much have you raised so far?
So we're just over $500 right now.
Oh, nice.
Which, considering they're a dollar song, it's not bad. It's something that we feel strongly about, and we're grateful for every donation that comes in.
Mm-hmm. I think I read on the trip that you have a master's degree in biological engineering.
That's correct, yeah.
So kind of what made you not necessarily switch from something scientific to artsy, but do they both have an equal presence in your life, or kind of just...
Yeah, I think the way I've always looked at it is, so when I was in school, so I did grad school and biological engineering at the same time. I was recording an album, and I still work as an engineer even now. But I think for me, it's this, like, having the two sides where you have this very creative side and you have an analytical side, that the two kind of work together. If you apply creativity to your research, then your research is better. If you apply some analytical thinking to your art, then it can be more meaningful and more thoughtful. So I think the two have kind of coexisted in a comfortable way and serve as a break from the other. Mm-hmm. Like I don't think I'm not the type of person that I get really obsessed with whatever I'm working on, but I'm not necessarily the kind of person that one is comfortable being really focused on one thing at a time. Mm-hmm. So having these two very different things living together has worked well for me, I think. It's like I said before, just a break from the other thing. Mm-hmm. If I get too sick of one, I can go do the other. But that usually doesn't happen. It's usually I want to do a lot more of both than just don't have the time.
We're going to play a song off of that Middo debut album right now. This is a song called Feet to the Sun.
Just a thing misunderstanding is real.
Middle will be playing the CMJ Music Marathon at Left Field in Lower Manhattan on October 17th. For more information on the group, visit them online at middomusic.com. Anime Banzai is a gaming and cosplay convention that takes place every year in, of all places, lovely Layton, Utah. It was originally founded in 2005, and it celebrates the art, culture, and impact of anime in America and all around the world. Every year, the convention puts together panels, costume contests, gaming tournaments, you name it, the usual cosplay and gaming stuff. Slug writer Thomas Winkley sat down with the convention's programming coordinator, Chris Allen, to talk about the event.
Where did Anime Banzai start, and really, what's the convention based about?
It started years ago at a college club called End of the World. It was at Salt Lake Community College. And somewhat funny with that is they wanted to go to a convention. The nearest one, anime convention, was 10 hours away in Denver. And so they thought, hey, you know what, why don't we do our own? And ended up realizing after doing it the first year, well, that was a lot more than 8 hours worth of work, 8 to 10 hours worth of work. Would have been a much quicker to just drive. You know, we started off and, they're like, okay, we'll get 100 people. And ended up getting 600.
Wow.
And that has just continued to grow. And the actual name of the convention is based off of an anime called GTO.
Okay.
And there's always a teacher. There's a teacher, I can't remember the full teacher's name, but the students always call him Teacher Banzai. And it's Banzai being the exclamation that really doesn't have a direct translation into American.
Gotcha.
So okay. That's kind of the history of it, and we've been going for 9 years now.
9 years, wow. So that's pretty solid news. It seems like you've had an increase in membership every year.
Consistently
growing, which is good. So what kind of anime is going to be represented at the convention?
Taking a look at the schedule, there is a lot. Thing about anime in general is that anime is a medium, more or less. And so we try to get a wide variety of that medium. So I don't know if it's going to be shown. I hope so. I'm going to make a request of our viewing room guy. There's a show that I've been watching called Silver Spoon. Not like the 1980s sitcom thing. And this gives kind of a breadth of it. Silver Spoon, for example, is about a guy who decides, okay, you know what, I'm tired of the normal colleges and stuff like that. And total guy born in the city, and he ends up at an agricultural college. And so literally having to learn animal husbandry, the whole thing, and just being completely exposed to real farm life. What's going to be shown a lot, it's just going to depend on what rights we can get to show it, which is kind of always up to the last minute and arranging schedules.
Absolutely. And to go along with that, I was kind of perusing the site. You had a crafting and a cosplay competition.
Yes.
What's that about?
Cosplay is costume play. That's normally when people dress up. Kind of nice thing about a contest is that people actually get to go and show exactly what they are capable of. These are costumes that they have most time made themselves, not just bought off a rack, and show what unique materials are made out, what kind of more stuff is capable of. One part fashion show, one part actually having the designer of it really come forward and bring that character to life.
Oh, gotcha, okay. And if I'm somebody who's never done much with anime, what benefits are there for me to be attending Anime Banzai?
I think it'll be an interesting experience for anyone who hasn't been to it. As far as you might find something that you like, there's always, you're going to find a lot of cultural panels, a lot of things that you may have, find that sub-interest, whether it's armor crafting, whether it's any of the design aspects of it, meeting someone that you never had any idea did a voice of something, and just suddenly go, oh, hey, this guy's done, or maybe find a childhood experience. We had a lady who worked for Simmons Media who had the opportunity to meet her basically childhood idol a few years ago, and had that just unique experience that a lot of times you don't get, to actually sit down and have a conversation with the guests.
That's really cool. What about the diehard fans? So, for example, meeting your childhood heroes. What else? What else can a diehard anime connoisseur, if you will, expect?
Dealer's Room, Artist Alley, kind of you'll have plenty of time to spend money. But you will also have the opportunity with fan panels to discuss your diehard love of it. perhaps defend it against people who don't enjoy it as much.
Okay, fair.
Or maybe find some new stuff that you never even thought of.
Who are some of the guests coming this year?
We have Richard Ian Cox, who has done voices for 20, 30 different shows.
Oh, wow.
Most prominently, some of his more prominent ones are Inuyasha. He has a lot of credits of all things in Pokemon, which I'm in general not interested in.
What? Oh, come on.
Really?
No Pokemon, really?
No, really. I was too old for it when it came out.
Okay, fair enough.
That was coming out right as I was leaving high school, so that was more of my Dragon Ball Z period, that kind of thing.
Gotcha.
More action. But no, he's doing a panel called Pokemon Musicals in the Gay. And I think we're just going to have to go just because it sounds hilarious.
Absolutely, yeah.
So that's the guest I'm looking forward to the most. I know a lot of people are looking forward to Richard Ian Cox. We've had... One of the things we always do try to do is bring in, we've got a guy by the name of Kyle Herbert, who has done a ton, and, you know, everything from major Disney releases like Wreck-It Ralph to Kiba in Naruto, Bleach and Aizen, which is the main villain, the longest period. So it's one of those where the guests are just kind of fun, and part of the thing I love about it is the guests are approachable.
Yeah.
They just kind of come, they have fun. They interact with the attendees a lot. That's kind of...
And they're hanging out. So if you know who they are, you can go up and say hi.
Well, even then, you'll generally be able to spot them by the huge crowd around them. But they're generally really open about it, so...
What does it cost to get in, and what does that get the attendee?
So for the full weekend at the door, it's $40.
Okay.
Friday's $20. Saturday is $30. Sunday is $15. And with a paying adult, children 10 or under are free.
Awesome. Okay.
And what that gets you is entrance into every event, every panel, all the guest signatures, all of the, like I said, every panel, everything. That's full access, short of the back areas that you don't want
to be in. Like the staging areas, exactly.
Yeah, you don't really need to be in the staging areas unless you're staff.
Yeah.
So that is full access.
So if you're an attendee at the con, not actually managing it and working with it, first thing you would go see, like walk through the front doors, where are you heading?
I just got back from actually an anime convention in Denver 2 weekends ago. And the very first thing that I do is I hit the vendor room. And the reason is because with a vendor room, you'll find the figures that normally are hard to find. You'll find, example, last year, there was a guy selling, this is a Banzai, there was a guy selling an original full diecast Metal Megatron in package, just absolutely gorgeous. The one that was taken off because it looked too realistic.
Yeah.
And he had that one very shortly.
Yeah, I can imagine it went pretty quick.
I want to say that one was like 600 though, but I mean, it was just gone. Convention I just went to in Denver, it was just, that was the first thing I hit, looking for those rare figs. That's my first thing always. After that, it's, I enjoy the people watching. Like just finding a place to sit down with a camera and just go nuts.
Okay, watch the cosplay roll by, see what's going on.
Exactly. You know, at that point, I can just sit there and look at the schedule and see if there's anything else that I want to do.
Absolutely. So with a lot of conventions, at least those of us that usually go as press, generally there's after parties or gatherings. Are there any of those around Davis there that you know of or things that the convention might be hosting?
There's nothing as far as an after party that the convention itself is hosting. Throughout the year, we do events, like one every month.
Sure.
And you can check our website for those. But no, there's no, since the majority of our audience is actually is between 16 to 24.
Okay, fair enough.
So it's a different demographic. So it's not like, okay, let's all go out to the bar. The hotel bar can get very interesting. I do have to say that for the people that do drink and even those that don't. That has been, but no, I've not heard of any specific like, hey, let's all go, we're going out to this bar.
Gotcha, okay. And then what's the anime scene in Salt Lake like?
It's... growing would be the best term.
Okay.
It's one of those where, you know, a lot of kids have grown up on it. And so as they've become teenagers and older, that has just continued and they've watched more and more shows traditionally. When we started, we were the only convention in Utah, and now there's 4.
Awesome. Okay.
So
it's definitely expanding.
It's definitely expanding. Kind of as just a nice little subgenre of geekdom.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess you kind of already touched on this, but just to reiterate, any other events that you're putting on throughout the year, so you've got like your monthly meetups, what are those like?
Our most recent one was a classic gaming night. We generally host them at a place called Cafeño, so we brought in the NESs, the Super Nintendos.
Ridiculous white coffee. Anyway, continue, sorry.
I take your fan of it.
I am indeed. I do like crack with my coffee, so I'm right up there, yeah.
So we do those. It really depends on what we're trying, what kind of the general thing we'll do, you know, various cosplay meetups. I wish I had a full list of them. And the best thing to do is just check on our website and our Facebook page, and we always post up when those are going to be and what the specific thing of it is going to be.
Awesome. If I'm looking for something to jump on Netflix or jump online and watch, what's one you would say absolutely you have to watch?
Well, let me ask you a question with that.
Sure.
What is a regular show that you like?
I'm doing everything Sons of Anarchy, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay.
And I just jumped into Arrow. So pretty much anything nerdy, superhero, or biker, I'm on board with. So
for the biker, I would actually go more into the mechanical end and say there's a good show called Initial D.
Okay.
The reason a lot of people don't like it is because they draw the mechanics and the racers like mechanics and racers.
Oh, okay.
They're not pretty boys.
Okay.
As far as the superheroes, the two that I would recommend right off the bat, Tiger and Bunny.
Okay.
Which, best way to describe Tiger and Bunny is, if you were to take kind of your classic Marvel world, Marvel or DC world, but instead of it being done by Stan Lee or anything like that,
mm-hmm.
better to say, take your classic Marvel world, take the X-Men, instead of them being founded by Professor Xavier, have them founded by Ted Turner. So he turns superheroes into quite literally a game show with points.
Okay.
And it's one of the funniest but just amazing ones. The other one that I would recommend is a show called Fate Zero.
Okay.
Bit on the historical buff end for the geeks, but basic concept is very strong mages about to fight over like this one device that they can do wishes on. They basically get one limited wish, as it was. And the various people, they summon a major person out of history. One of the main people summons King Arthur. It's kind of roll the dice of who you get, but ultimately rolls the dice as it was and gets King Arthur, who it ends up being is a woman.
Okay.
Yeah. So just kind of a different play on it.
Gotcha.
And the battles on it are great. It's to see kind of Alexander the Great as it was with King Arthur.
Right.
And all those classically historical people. See the original serial killer, who I forget his name, who's out of France during Joan of Arc's time.
Oh, yeah. No.
Bluebeard, but
yeah, it's too early for this reference. Sorry.
No, it's fine, but no, he is absolutely sick and twisted.
Awesome.
And wonderful at it. And so that is a show I would absolutely recommend.
Okay.
Those would be my top three right now, other than Silver Spoon, which I am strangely addicted to.
Anime Banzai takes place October 18th to October 20th at the Davis Conference Center in Layton. For more information on the event, visit them online at animebanzai.org.
Plan B Theater's 2013-14 season is devoted entirely to the work of resident playwright Eric Samuelson. The season opens with Nothing Personal, featuring Susan McDougall, Kenneth Starr, and The Abuse of Power, followed by Radio Hour, Episode 8, Fariana, where the writers of the children's television show are possessed by their own characters. John Maynard Keynes and Friedrich Hayek, with economics and mortal danger in clearing bombs, and a series of Mormon women confront their own culture in three. Visit planbtheater.org for details and to subscribe today.
This is your weekly daily calendar for the week starting October 15th and running through October 21st. Lots of goodies. As always, I'll encourage you to go check out slugmag.com every damn day of the week. Always new stuff going in there. Starting on Tuesday, October 15th, all the people who love the big, loud rock and roll, this is a great show for you. Red Fang, straight out of Portland, a great band, are headlining a show that also has Helms Ali and Gay Theist at Urban Lounge. That'll be a good one. Meanwhile, up in Logan, Taj Mahal, blues legend, he's playing at the Eccles Theater. That'll be a good one as well for everyone up in northern Utah. Wednesday, October 16th, a couple of great shows to keep an eye on. Built to Spill, one of my personal indie rock favorites, Boise's favorites. Always a good band. They're playing at Kilby Court along with Slam Dunk. They'll be back later in the fall for an Urban Lounge show, so all you all-ages kiddies, get out there to Kilby Court. Doug March is someone to see. Also that night, Passion Pit returns. They're headlining over at the Complex. The Joy Formidable opens. That's a great double bill. Should be a fine show over the Complex way. On Thursday, October 17th, Surfer Blood is back in town. They came through the depot earlier this summer. They're back for a headlining show of their own at Urban Lounge. Also that night, a surprisingly fine pop concert. Pink puts on a whale of a show. She can really sing. Saw her at Kingsbury Hall many years ago. She's headlining Energy Solutions Arena, so if you're willing to brave that, you might get a good payoff with a Pink concert. And I'm serious about that. On Friday, October 18th, King Kong and the Shrines at Urban, one of the best live bands you'll get coming through town. Always a blast, always sells out, so get on that and get your tickets early for sure. Saturday, October 19th, Ani DeFranco returns. First time in a while for her. Again, always a solid live show, whether it's her solo, whether she has a band. She always configures different musicians around her. That should be great at the Depot. You actually get to have a beer while you listen to Ani. And then on Monday, October 21st, City and Color is back into town. They're at In the Venue. That should be a fine way to get the week started. As always, go to slugbag.com. Look for the new listings every damn day of the week. For free, you can add your own events, and for a mere $5 a month or $50 a year, you can add some quality links to your own events. That's all good stuff. That's October 15th to October 21st, your weekly daily calendar. Creature Double Feature is a two-piece neo-psychedelic band from Salt Lake City comprised of brothers Davis and Mason Johnson. They've released several EPs, a few live compilations, and some singles over the years. In 2013, they finally put together their first full-length album called A Ghost Story. This is a song called Eastern Winds.
So for me.
download the album as well as their entire catalog of music, visit creaturedoublefeature.bandcamp.com. For more information on the band, you can visit them online at facebook.com/creaturedoublefeaturemusic. Well, believe it or not, as this podcast gets posted out there to the interwebs world, the Utah Jazz season is nigh only a couple weeks from starting, and it has been an eventful off-season, summer, spring, you name it. We are bringing in resident jazz fan slash expert Mike Brown to talk about what's coming up. Welcome, Mike.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, by the time you hear this podcast, the Jazz will have already lost about three preseason games. So,
although preseason might be where the best results come this year.
Yeah, you could be right. You could be right.
Well, let's set this up real fast. So the last time you were visiting, the Jazz had all these questions they had to deal with in the offseason. Were they going to sign some old dudes and keep them around like the Al Jefferson, the Paul Millsap? Were they going to find anybody worthwhile in the draft and all that? And they ended up not signing those old dudes. They're going young, and they made a huge trade on draft night to get Trey Burke, Michigan point guard.
Yeah, they did. They pretty much did everything that I think we said in the last podcast they would do.
Yeah,
because we're geniuses.
They would do, probably.
Yeah, and hope that they would
do. So what was your impression? Let's start with that draft night, because that was a little bit of a blockbuster, especially because Jazz don't pull off a lot of trades lately like that.
Yeah, I mean, it was a blockbuster, but, you know, they got lucky. And a blockbuster and a shitty draft, keep in mind.
Yes.
So, I mean, the thing with the NBA draft in general, just my own personal opinion on it, is that the draft is bullshit.
Yeah.
And just all dumb luck. And yep. Unless there's like a LeBron,
unless you're like
or
one of the first two or three dudes, maybe.
Well, not even that. I mean, keep in mind that Marvin Williams, who's on our team, went number two.
And sadly, he's still on our team
and
this year.
He's got one more year. And we found out at Media Day today that he had surgery on his Achilles this summer. I didn't even hear about that.
I have a feeling he's not going to be getting off the bench very much anyway.
No.
But we're just paying him $9 million to sit around for a year and then leave town.
He'll be a great mentor to our young core.
There you go. But we pick up what a lot of people thought was the best point guard in the draft, a weak draft.
Yes, he was the best point guard in a shitty draft.
And we were lacking a point guard.
We're still lacking a point guard. First year point guards
get their ass kicked
pretty regularly get their asses kicked unless you're Derrick Rose or Damian Lillard. Those guys are special. But if you're just like a 6 foot point guard, man, no.
So best case scenario is maybe he has a little Damian Lillard in him, the Weber State kid who got Rookie of the Year in Portland, right?
Damian Lillard's got like 4 inches and
can pump
and
it.
40 pounds on him, I think. Yeah. And he was working out with Stockton, though. That's pretty cool.
That's a good sign.
But so did Darren Williams. So
who was good, but gone.
Was good, but gone.
And he's not going to be able to dominate in the NBA like he did in the Big Ten, that's for sure.
No.
Not even close.
Not even close.
And you could see it. Did you watch any of the summer league stuff
at all? I did, but I'm
not
going to jump on the bandwagon of judging.
Of ragging him for
that. Yeah, it's the fucking summer league. Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe it's Florida. He was hot. It's America's penis. It's hot down there.
It's way hot.
Yeah.
And it was like a week after draft day, too. He'd been partying
exactly,
for like a week straight,
man.
And then he has to go play.
As soon as you get drafted, you got to fly a million places, and then
go
like,
play with a bunch of dudes you've never met before.
Right.
So, how about the rest of our offseason here? So we lose Big Al, gone. Millsap,
good.
Longtime player, gone.
Good.
Who else do we get out of there? The kid who is like shooting a bunch of three pointers and missing about 80% of them, but still
JJ
set a bunch
Redick?
Of records.
No.
We probably were trying to get him. Randy Foy, gone.
Gone.
So we're going to obviously go with all the young dudes that we've been stacking up on our bench for the last few years.
Which is what they should have. I mean, they should have been playing these guys last year.
Yeah, well, that's an argument. I don't know.
I think after the trade deadline last year, when they didn't move Al Jefferson and Paul Millsap, I think that's when they knew what they were going to do with those guys.
Yeah.
I mean,
let them play it out and then bail.
And I think at that point, that's when they should have started playing the young guys. Before that trade deadline last year, I would not have given a fuck if they just didn't you know, if they just kept starting Big Al and Paul Millsap in one games and tried to make the playoffs. But, you know, I mean, it's so redundant. You know what you're getting with Paul Millsap and Al Jefferson. You can love those guys. Yeah, they're great, blah, blah, blah. But they will get you. They're gone. They will get you in the
eighth. And they got paid, although Millsap only got like a 2-year deal, which was funny, but it was time for him to go, I think. And Big Al got big money that no way the Jazz were going to pay him.
It's time for Paul to prove that he's not a starter on another team.
Yeah, on a shitty team like the Hawks, nonetheless. So we're going to get like what a lot of Jazz people wanted were to see like Enes Kanter get to play lots of minutes.
Right.
To see Derek Favors play lots of minutes. We're going to have...
I'm one of them.
Hayward's going to be out there. He's going to be like the leader of the team pretty much now. He's got the most experience.
Yeah, he'll probably be the team captain.
White Lightning.
He's
there.
He's the whitest.
He'll be the guy who's on the billboard outside the arena.
Exactly. He'll be the one in the Zions Bank commercials.
That's right. It's a little Subway ad. Another Subway ad, maybe.
Right.
And then we're going to have this rookie point guard. And we've got like... the end of the Golden State bench that got traded our way. They're going to come off the books.
According to Media Day, they're all really happy to be here.
I'm sure. To sit on the bench here for a year and then be gone.
Well, they get,
they're getting paid.
Yeah, I can think of worse jobs.
So you're a longtime Jazz fan. How do you think the Jazz fans are going to react to the fact that they're going to be arguably worse than we've ever seen them in terms of their win-loss record
this year? I think this is one of those years that where when you're going around town, it separates from who you know is a real fan to who you know is just your fair weather bandwagon
bullshit
dude.
Fan.
I mean, that, you know, like I understand that for years we were fucking spoiled. Even in like the Darren Williams Boozer era, we were spoiled. We knew we were going to the
playoffs.
We didn't
really go backwards that far between Carl and Stockton and those guys.
No, and I mean the reality of this year is 25 wins, in my opinion, is great.
Huge.
Huge.
We might not want that because we want to get better draft picks.
Right.
And next year's draft is supposed to be awesome.
And the other thing with the, you know, everybody's talking about next year's draft and like the team tanking is that there's a handful of other teams around the league that are going to do just that, that are going to tank.
Oh, yeah.
And the Jazz aren't going to have to try to tank.
Right. We're going to have a bunch of young dudes playing.
A
point guard's going to get grinded up into dust eventually.
But, like, all you can do, here's my biggest fear. Here's what you do. You cross your fingers and hope it turns out like Oklahoma City when it was Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, and they fucking sucked. That was when they were still in Seattle that first year, and then maybe the next year they weren't that great, and then boom, that's what you hope for.
Build it up.
What you don't know is if those guys don't take the contract extensions. I'm the most worried about that.
Yeah.
I know they're already talking now, but it could happen. No, and nobody's fucking talking about that. Nobody's reporting on that. Nobody's saying like, okay, so we grow these players and then boom, they're in Miami, they're in LA. You know, like that's kind of the reality of it. It could happen. I mean,
if they prove themselves to be as good as we all hope they are, then everybody's going to want a piece of them.
Exactly. And everyone that can sign them is going to go after them when they're free agents. I mean, is there really going to be that loyalty that, like, you know, Kevin Durant and Westbrook kind of had for each other and for the franchise? Are they going to feel that way about Utah?
Yeah.
Larry's dead, so I don't know if Greg's going to be able to give them another dealership to keep him around like he did Carl, but...
Well, we might also find out that all these guys we've been relying on being awesome someday, maybe they come out and shit the bed this year.
Exactly.
We're like, oh, well, we don't want to pay whoever, you know, that money that we thought we would be automatically, you know.
They just might not
develop. They might not be. You never know. The fun part will be watching that Andres Biedrins guy who came from Golden State throw up air balls on the occasional free throw.
Oh, yeah.
And there's some great clips of him out there, like, getting a blowjob from somebody back in Eastern Europe where he's from.
Oh, that's okay back there,
though. It's quality stuff. It's some good stuff. I like the fact that Jazz might have, like, a sex scandal of some sort along the way. And it's pretty low bar in Utah for a sex scandal, you know?
Oh, yeah, but, I mean, you know, you get bored and pinned up in Utah. I can...
It could be strange days.
But, I mean, yeah, you know those Eastern Europeans. That's okay.
You get him together with our Turkish man, Enes Kanter. Who knows? Kanter would tweet out to have ladies come just meet him randomly downtown for dinner just via Twitter. So Lord knows what's going to happen now.
Yeah, there's going to be some wild sex parties going on.
There's
going
to be some more fake IDs at Park City Live, Harry O's, like when D-Will was here.
You can go to P.F. Chang's and then off to Club One or something stupid like that.
It might
be
the most exciting Jazz year in the like regular pages of the paper.
As far as scandals go, yeah. Don't forget, we got to throw Rudy Gobert in the mix, too. He's French.
That's right. We have a Frenchie, a Turk, like a Yugoslavian fellow. It's an interesting mix. So what's the thing, what's the thing you're most excited about this season, I guess I'd say, as you go forward?
Oh, easy. The Jumbotron.
Oh!
Yeah, we got a new Jumbotron.
That's how you keep the fans happy when you're losing all your games.
That's how you're keeping me happy. I mean, that fucker is huge from the specs that I've seen. They haven't put out any actual pictures of it. There's an open scrimmage of October 5th. What is that, like 5 days?
Yeah.
It's so,
in the past from when this thing's going out to the world.
Oh, that's right.
But the preseason will be off and
running. Should I pretend like I already saw the Jumbotron?
You can run around and try to get on the Kiss Cam or whatever.
Oh, man, the Kiss Cam's going to be... Yeah, they do the Kiss Cam. Kiss Cam's going to be epic now.
It's going to be huge.
It's going to be huge.
You're not going to want to bring an ugly date to the games.
No.
It's going to be gigantic.
Unless you can get you lower bowl tickets, then it's okay.
Hanging out with Beedrins, working your way down.
Right. Maybe I can swing on Beedrins' wife.
That's right. The Jumbotron is... probably the biggest exciting thing
that
on the team.
Honestly, to me, like when people are like, you know, what's the most exciting? Who are you most excited to see? I mean, dude, okay, Rudy Gobert is going to be fun to watch.
Yeah.
Because he's like 7'10".
String bean,
yeah,
he's giant Frenchman.
Giant Frenchman that can dunk without jumping.
Yeah.
That'll be fun to watch. I mean, we all know the core four.
Yeah. They picked up some like kid off of like the summer league that sounds like he can just pump up threes.
Ian Clark, yeah.
I'm excited for that.
That could be
cool.
See
what happens. I think it'll just be fun to watch a bunch of young dudes who don't really know what the hell they're doing.
Yeah,
yet,
and I mean, anytime, the last time the Jazz sucked really bad, I was, because I'm not a season ticket holder, I was able to score a shitload of tickets that year because no one wanted to go see them.
They'll be coming cheap this year, I'm feeling.
You want my tickets, dude?
Yeah, man,
fuck it. You know, they got beer down there. I'll go down
there. That's right. There'll be some cheap tickets on the street, I have a feeling. Most of this season, especially as the record goes south and a lot of the Fairweather fans bail.
Yeah.
There'll be tickets.
I think the other thing non-Jazz related that I'm really looking forward to seeing is the Lakers sucking this year.
That's going to be pretty sweet.
That's going to be awesome.
Kobe hopefully is not even going to be able to come back.
When we're talking about teams tanking, I think the Lakers are like almost guaranteed to just fucking tank.
They want one of those young guys.
Kobe's injury is so gnarly, and now they don't know when he's coming back. And
Steve Nash is like 48.
Steve Nash is having grandkids, and
that's right.
And fucking, it's gonna be awesome.
It's gonna be fun to watch.
Yeah.
Well, Mike Brown, we will definitely be picking this up again. Maybe I don't know, a little bit into the season where we get a load of what these guys are doing and how bad our record is.
Oh man.
As, of course, we'll encourage everyone to read your monthly dirt column and every damn issue of Slug. Where do people find you on Twitter and whatnot?
On Twitter, you can follow me at FuckMikeBrown.
Boom.
My Instagram's blowing up. It's at Fagatron.
That's the Instagram. Excellent.
That's the Instagram. Those are the best ways.
Those are the ways.
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, too.
And you're a regular Slug Mag contributor. Damn month. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming in, and we will pick it up when the Jazz are probably 0-10, 0-15, somewhere in there.
I like that.
All right. As always, thanks for listening to Soundwaves from the Underground. And for all things Slug Magazine, be sure to visit slugmag.com. Next week, we're going to have Jeffrey Stedman in the house to talk about, all the best Halloween-related treats up and down Utah way. He's from Yelp, Utah, of course, and we'd like to hear what some of your favorites are. You can either send us an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. That line is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Give us a good tip on some Halloween treats and we just might play you on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Esther Moronio, Alexander Ortega, and myself, Dan Nalen. The executive producer is Angela H. Brown. The theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. The main logo and art design is by T. Doan, and the technical design is by Kate Colgan. Be sure to fire us up again next week. We'll be talking to the good folks at Plan B Theater about Nothing Personal, the kickoff show of their season. We'll talk to Yelp Utah about Halloween foods, and we'll also talk to the folks from Bella Aura Studios. Thanks for listening.